All right. Hello, and thanks for joining me. There's a lot of people here. That's awesome. This late in the afternoon. My name is Mats Christensen. I'm a program manager on the ASP.NET team, more specifically on the Visual Studio side of the web tooling, CSS, HTML, JavaScript, MVC tooling, and all that stuff. So I have a lot of great new features to show you today. So 2 weeks ago, we had TechEd in Orlando. And this same talk was given there, but it was given by Scott Hunter, our lead PM. So what I'm going to do for you today is not just do the same talk that you might already have seen on Channel 9, but I'm going to show you some of the same stuff which is available today in the RC, Visual Studio RC. But then I'm going to show you what we have in RTM as well, and beyond. So it's going to be very different than the first talk. And the build of Visual Studio I have is actually from last week. So it's very, very new. And there's a little funny thing about it. It says beta. So you will see that it says beta, and it looks kind of like beta. But trust me when I tell you, it is very, very new. It's from the dev branch. That's why it doesn't have all the new icons and all that stuff. So don't be confused about that. It is very new. All right. How many people here are from Holland, by the way? Hands up. Oh, a good portion. Awesome. Anyway, that's my slide for today. So let's start with Visual Studio 2010. So the first feature I'm going to show you is very, very important because it allows for you to test very easily the new Visual Studio 2012 on your projects back home and in your company and on your team. So let's here in 2010 just create a new web forms app here. And let's run it. And you see here it works fine, just as you would expect. Let's just go here. So let me close 2010 and take the same solution that I just created. I'm going to open it in RC. And now it's going to give me a little report here saying, hey, I just did a little tweaking of your solution, your project file. But don't be alarmed. Nothing bad is happening here. So I'll just close this, and you see I have the solution open. I'll run this. It works fine, as I would expect. Now here comes the trick. I can now open this back in Visual Studio 2010, and I can run this, and everything still works. So what this means is that you can slowly start to upgrade. Like some of your developers on the team can slowly upgrade to Visual Studio 2012 and keep the rest of the crew on 2010 and then just upgrade slowly. They can still work on the same projects. So that's a very nice feature of 2012. How many people here have actually tried 2012? Awesome. That's almost half of you. That's really cool. So I have built a website here. Let's just run it to see what's going on. So, simple little website. It says Web 11. Web 11 was the code name for the Visual Studio tools for ASP.NET. And very simple website. Now, what I would like to do is I would like to change my text here to be an H1. I want the text size to be a little bit larger, so I want to do H1. So I'll just start typing here. I don't know if you noticed what happened. So as I change one tag, the other one changes with me. This is by far my most favorite feature in Visual Studio. And you see this and you say, oh, that's cool, right? It's a small little thing. And you wonder, why did we not do this 5 years ago? I don't know. But now we have it. So it's one of those things. So I want to add some audio to my website here. So the new HTML editor is fully capable of everything HTML5. Like, it understands all of it, all the attributes, all the tags, all of it. So of course it understands audio. And you know, I can type it manually, but I can also use a snippet to do that. So you all know about snippets, right? If you hit tab twice, you get like an experience like this. So it just so happened to be that I have some files here, audio files. So it was audio, look, and let's run this. Yeah. So relatively simple to do all these new things. So what we have been working a lot on is to figure out what are the workflows that a web developer goes through and try to optimize them. So we've added a lot of new snippets. We've added a lot of added capabilities. And let me show you a very good example of that. So I'm here in a web form. Let me add a grid view. Let's give it an ID. And now, there's a new feature in ASP.NET 4.5 that allows us to do data binding and model binding like we know from MVC in a very, very cool way. So you know that when you were data binding to a data grid or a repeater, you would go in your page load event and you would set up like data source equals, and then you would call grid.databind. And then you had to manually figure out what about post backs and if not post back and so on. Now we can do select method. I hit equals and I get IntelliSense here. Create new method. Okay. Let me click that one. So nothing seemed to happen. So I'm going to add the update method here because I want my grid to be updatable by the user. And here we go. So that's all fine. But what happened under the hood was that we opened the code behind and filled in two methods. Whoop. Demo fail. Here's the thing. Item type. Here we go. First, I have to tell it which type my data is going to be bound to, in this case, a person. And then I can do my select method. Here we go. Whoop. There we go. What? It's beta. This, yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, you're right. Thank you, sir. Here we go. All right. So because we now know exactly what type of data you're binding, the actual methods that we create in your code behind are tailored to that. So now you see what we're dealing with here. We know it's a person that you're returning. So here you just do a call to like your, you know, database.getPersons or people or whatever you call it, get users. But here it gets really interesting because now we do the model binding as you know in MVC. We are actually handling all the validation. We're handling everything here. And there's no page load event on this page anymore. I can take all this code for my data binding and model binding scenarios and actually move to a library in a different project if I wanted to. So I can get a really nice abstraction. And so this was ported from MVC and into web forms. So one of the things we had, the whole workflow thing, was that a lot of features are actually only accessible in design view. Like if you want to add the data source, if you want to do auto formatting of columns or edit columns in a grid view, those things only existed in design view. So you had to come over here and you could click this menu here, and you would get this little fly-out menu where you could, you know, access some of these built-in wizards and help windows here. But the designer is sometimes slow, and not everyone likes it. We actually heard a lot of feedback from people that didn't really like to use the designer. So now we've taken all that whole menu and actually made it accessible right here. So you get the exact same thing without leaving Source View. But we took it one step further. Because people that don't like to use the designer, they really don't like to use the designer. So we had to make sure that we could go all the way. So let's add a button here. Now, sometimes I have to go to design view, create my button, then go to design view and double click the button, and it would auto generate my event handler and my code behind. Now, this could be any event handler. Doesn't have to be the unclick. But there was this workflow of going back and forth in some situations. Now I can just write any server event here, onClick equals, and you see it says create new event. So exact same thing happens. We go to code behind, and you have your event handler. Finally. But when I look at my my file here, it starts to grow. Right? I mean, projects evolve over time, and you want to refactor. And in this case, I think I want to take my audio element and put in a user control. First of all, I want to clean up, but also I want to make it reusable. So user control is a very good choice here. So if I were in Visual Studio 2010, I would do something like this. Add new item, user control, give it a name, blah, 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 copy all the text, open the design view, drag the new user control over to the designer, switch back to source view. So quite a lot of steps, actually. So it would be nice if I could just do something like this. Extract your user control. So let me click that. It's going to prompt me for a name. It's called audio. And here we go. So it did the right thing here. It registered correctly on top, and it did add this thing in here. Now, what if you already had a user control that you want to add to a page? You can just take it now and drag it on. Boom. Again, why didn't we do this 5 years ago? I don't know. But you see here, it's kind of smart. It knew that I already had registered the audio one up here. Even if I had registered my user controls in my web config, which some people do, this would be supported. So if you had those registered in the web config, we would not add it to the page here. So a little bit clever it is, yes. All right. So we are looking at this big project. Right, this could be Umbraco. This could be .NET Nuke. It could be a lot of files. And I want to change some text. I just want to change my menu item text from something to something else. But where is it? Is it in a user control, master page, server control? Where is it? It could be anywhere. It could be a partial if I'm using MVC. I'll have to go kind of search for it. But what we can do now is we can use Page Inspector. How many people here have used Page Inspector or have heard of it? Hands up. Only a few people. All right. So this is actually something I'm very, very excited about. So a brand new feature, I can now right-click any file, like any ASPX or any view in MVC, for instance, and I can say view in Page Inspector. Let's do this. And let's build. So what's actually happening here is that we're rendering your the site here in a browser inside Visual Studio. You get the DOM tree down here, and you get the CSS and the style stuff going on over here. You get that. It's the exact same controls as in Internet Explorer, the developer toolbar. If you hit F12, those are the tools you see right here, so they should be very familiar. They look kind of ugly right now because my font size is huge. It's kind of cool. It shows me exactly what files I have for this page. This is my default ASPX. Right? These three files have made up my site. If I'm in Umbraco or some big CMS, there could be like 20, 30 files. So how do I find this text that I'm looking for? I'm going to hit the Inspect button. And I'm going to now mouse over the page and take a look at what happens on the right side here. All right. It actually takes me to the right place. So now it's very easy for me to figure out what to change and then change it. Of course, I can use the DOM tree down here for the exact same thing. So let me find the body. Now I can see what styles are attached to the body here. And, you know, I can change everything just like in Internet Explorer. I can also click the selector. And it will take me directly to the file, my CSS file, that has specified these rules for my body element. And then it's very easy. Let's change the background color to blue. And as I change something, Page Inspector now knows that something has changed. You need to refresh. So it says refresh, use Control Alt Enter. Yes, sir. Let's do that. And it refreshes, and now you can see the background is blue. Now, what's really, really cool about this is that you can take this window, and you can drag it to your secondary monitor and make it full size. And then whenever you make a change, instead of doing Alt-Tab, go to your browser, hit F5, look, you know, see how it looks like, Alt-Tab back into VS, you just do Control-Alt-Enter. And the cool thing is the Page Inspector never takes focus. So if you're writing a C-sharp or CSS or whatever, you just hit Control-Alt-Enter and keep writing. And this thing just updates over on the side on your secondary monitor. It's really, really, really awesome. Sorry? Yes, so how is this rendered? It is using Internet Explorer, yes. You have to have Internet Explorer 9 for it to work. If you're running Windows 8, it will be IE10, of course. No, you can't switch its rendering engine right now. It's something that we're looking into. So for RC and RTM, that will not be possible. It will be in the future. What about websites that require authentication? That would work in the exact same way as normally. You would log in, it would set its cookie, and then you could do whatever you want. You can actually, you can kind of program it a little bit to know more about these things. But think of it as a browser. Just think of it as a browser that you can click on and it will take you to the source code. All right. So let's continue in CSS. How many people here love CSS? 8. Awesome. How many people here wish they don't have to do CSS for the next 3 months of their life? More than 8. Yeah, so this is kind of a funny thing with CSS is special because a lot of people just really don't like CSS. It's difficult, right? You have to target different browsers. You don't know if the stuff you're writing will work in different browsers. There is no compile time checks. There is no nothing. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. Right, it gets frustrating. So we try to make it simpler. And we've also tried to make the whole workflow seem more natural. So one of the big problems in like a, from a workflow perspective is working with colors. Let's say that you find a color you want somewhere online on some website. How do you get that color into your own style sheet? Well, you probably have a Firefox plugin, or you have Paint.net or Photoshop open, and you make a screenshot and you take it in there and you kind of copy the code and the the hex values and whatnot. It's kind of annoying. So it would be nice if we could do something like this. As I type, and I know that it's a color in this case because it starts with a hash or a pound, inline color picker pops up. So this is a brand new paradigm in Visual Studio. Right? This is in IntelliSense. I can keep writing, and nothing happens. And I just move to the next line and it disappears. It does not bother me. It doesn't bother the way I type. It doesn't interfere with my muscle memory. But I can choose to use it. If I hit the arrow key down, I go into it here. And all these colors are colors that come from the same style sheet. So we actually parse everything, find all the colors, so that you can very easily reuse the same color so you don't end up with like 30 different tones of gray, for instance. That's very common. And you can see here, you can do RGB. I mean, it all works in the same workflow here. You can hit the arrow down again. And now we get the full thing. And it works as you would expect. We have the so CSS3 have this notion of you can add opacity to a color. So we have this slider down here. And you can see how it works. If we go all the way back up, it snaps back to the original format. In this case, hex. It could be a named color. It could be HSL. But what about that website that I really just wanted to get the color? I don't want to start Photoshop and use like 3 gigs of memory doing that. So I can just click the eyedropper right here. And anything I point at on my monitors, dual monitor, any application I have open, I can just copy the color. So let's get this blue guy right here. So a lot of stuff has been done here. Actually, so much have been done. When we set out to build VS 2012, we quickly realized that the CSS editor we had was actually not good enough. It was getting a little bit old, and it wasn't quite ready for the new CSS 3 features. So we threw everything away. Started completely from scratch. And so the editor you have right here, it's brand new. It's really, really fast. And it has by far the best standard support that you'll find in probably any IDE. But we did more than that. We kind of looked at making sure that everything you're used to in C# also works in CSS. So we have outlining. We have regions. Here's a funny thing. Control-KC. For commenting. Can you believe it? We never had this in CSS. You could not, there was no keyboard shortcut for creating a comment. We kind of fixed that. So what about all the browser specific stuff, right? This is where it gets really tough. Like if I want to do a border radius, I kind of need to know how to do that. It's not obvious. But let's create a border radius. So I can type border radius. I can also just do like radius. So see how we kind of searches within IntelliSense and filters down to what we think is the right thing. In this case, it was the right thing. This completely changed the way you type. At least it has for me. So I never write border radius anymore. I just type radius. Like if I want a background image, BAIM. Text decoration, TED, much, much faster. So let's go with radius. And I do tap, and I do tap again. We now have code snippets in CSS. And I know a lot of you probably don't use code snippets. We know that most people actually don't use code snippets. But for CSS, it's a completely different story. And I think that you're going to love this. Because what just happened here? We automatically inserted the Mozilla and WebKit vendor specifics. How many people here know about vendor specific properties? Hands up. Awesome. Half of you. Cool. So this is where it gets really tricky. So let's give this like 15 pixels. Actually, I think I have a place for this somewhere. Yeah. Here we go. So you don't have to worry about these things anymore. We kind of just take care of it. Let's do it here as well. 15 pixels, and they all line up. Let's just run this guy again. And you see we now have beautiful blue background and rounded corners. So of course, if you do Metro, you don't want to do rounded corners. But this is a sort of a simple example. Let's do something like transform. How many vendor-specific versions of transform exist? 4. But it couldn't be easier. So I think the site needs a little to be a little bit cooler. So let's do this. Yeah, here we go. All right, so this is sort of this to do this rotation was actually pretty advanced back in the day. You had to do like filter and do you know the what's it called, the DirectX filters. And now it's basically just transform, tap, tap, and here you go. And this works in all browsers. IE9 and up. All right. Now, here's another thing. So I really want you to love CSS because it will make your life so much easier. I think most people are aware of this, but you know, it's kind of one of those things where you're, not really. But one of the problems we had is like, how do you format CSS so it makes sense? Here's an example. Here we go, full screen. So consider this. We have a header, a class header, selector here for this rule. Underneath, we have, again, class header, and then an H1. So according to the cascade, right, cascading style sheet, CSS, according to the cascade, this rule right here is a child of this rule right here. And that's why it's indented like you see here. So if I do header H1 span, you can see how it works. Right. We maintain this for you. It makes it very, very easy to figure out exactly how the cascade flows because it can get really, really difficult. Also, it makes you kind of organize your file really well because you make sure that everything is in the right order so you get the right indentation. If you don't like this, you can, of course, turn it off. I find it really useful, though. So you see this throughout the thing here. Pseudo selectors, really difficult. There's like 2 billion. You know, I know hover and active and focus, right? But there's quite a lot more than that. And these are only the W3C standard ones. What about all the vendor specific ones? I type minus, and look what happens. Now all the vendor specifics show up. So there's Mozilla, there's MS, WebKit. Right, there's a lot, but now we have full intelligence for it. So that hopefully should make everything a little bit easier. So why don't we show all the vendor specifics? Why do you have to type minus? Let me just type minus here. And this will kind of illustrate the point. Let's go. That was Microsoft Internet Explorer. Now we have Opera. And here comes WebKit. And it just goes on and on and on. That's why we hide them by default, because there's a billion of them. Actually, there's exactly 250. And there's exactly 310 standard properties. And the reason why I know this is because when we built this and designed the CSS editor, we were thinking, hey, let's do it right. Let's do it the right way and not the way we used to do it. The way we used to do it was saying, everything that we don't know, that the W3C doesn't know about, is invalid. Right? So if you, in 2010, and you don't have Web Standards Update, if you open a CSS3 files, you get a billion errors. Like, what I used to do is I just turned them off because I knew I was right. I knew that border radius was a valid thing, but Visual Studio 2010 disagreed. So we are making sure that we have the best support that you'll ever get for all these standards. But we do one more thing that's really important. If you do any hacks, if you do any vendor-specific stuff, we'll make sure you do it right. So if you do, let's do Mozilla appearance button. Right, this is valid. You see IntelliSense for the full thing. Now let's say I did a mistake here. We will also validate Mozilla-specific and WebKit-specific stuff. This took probably a year to collect all this information, by the way. Also, a common hack that you do for like old versions of IE is that you would fill up your site with underscores and stars, right? So the star says, this works in IE6 and IE7. Any other browser will ignore this. This guy down here only works in IE6, and again, everyone else ignores it. So you can do like specific things. You see this all over the place. We have literally looked at hundreds and hundreds of real-world style sheets, and you see this everywhere. It used to give an error, and you see here it does not anymore. So we call this real-world validation. We want to make sure that whatever works in the real world, we support and we help you out with. I mean, you even get IntelliSense. Right? Even though the W3C validator will say, hey, this doesn't exist, error. We say, well, sometimes you have to do this, so let's help you out. But there is nothing IE-specific about this. I want to make that very clear. The support we have in HTML, HTML5, CSS3, and JavaScript, there's nothing IE-specific about it. I talked to the IE team and told them that, hey, we're going to treat IE completely like it was any other browser. And they said, good. That's exactly how they would want it as well. So that's kind of the why we could do the real-world validator. And if you're interested in knowing what we're actually supporting, you can try and go to realworldvalidator.com. It's a little hobby project I built. Basically, I wrote an extension for the CSS editor that would spit out all the support for all properties and pseudo elements. And you can see that's why I know there's exactly 310 and 250 vendor. Oh, 260. Damn. Okay, yeah, new ones pop in all the time. That's right, because last week I added the new Opera stuff for Opera 12. They now support animation. Okay. So all this you get in RTM. Some of it you have in RC, but some of this you only get in RTM, so you have to wait a little bit for that. How many people here have worked with JSON? Oh, okay, so all of you. So if I want to build a website that talks to the Twitter API, I'm receiving some JSON from Twitter, and I want to do some work with it and maybe display like a widget on my website with latest tweets or whatever. How would I do that? Well, you would probably, you know, go to the developer.twitter.com and look at what are the signatures, what does the API look like, what does the JSON look like, and then you would do the web request and you would parse the JSON using JSON.NET or whatnot. So there's another way you can do it. Let's just pretend for a moment that this is Twitter's developer site. And here's an example from their examples. This is JSON. I'm just gonna copy this. So what I can do now is that I can say paste special and say paste JSON as classes. And here we go. Is this a good feature? Cool. You were so silent. I think this is awesome. Yeah, so basically we're using JSON.NET. That's also what Web API is using, the new ASP.NET Web API. So if you're using that in conjunction with, let's say, Twitter, and you use this with Web API, you know that the serialization and deserialization will use things the same core component, which is kind of nice. Okay. So there's like a new trend going on right now in JavaScript rendering, so and templating. So you probably heard of like Knockout.js and like a lot of these different templating engines for JavaScript. And support for them is kind of difficult, and non-existing, by the way. But if you're using types stuff like mustache and handlebars, or JS render, JS view, and so on, the list is getting longer and longer every day. New frameworks pop up all the time. We can now add support for that. So consider this little example right here. This is like a typical template that you write in your HTML, and then you use JavaScript to data bind some JSON object to that template and render it in HTML. But look here what we do. We can now actually fully support these new mustache and handlebar type of template engines. And we can actually go pretty far because there's a lot of flavors of these. So there's a flavor that looks like this, you know, if name. See, so we actually get full support for that. So I know that some of you probably are going to play with that or maybe going to play with like mustache and handlebars in the near future probably. So we're going to have full support for that. Now, let's look at some JavaScript, shall we? Who here likes JavaScript more than CSS? Who here likes CSS more than JavaScript? Okay, it's about even. All right. Okay. So JavaScript is a dynamic language. It comes with its own very unique problems. And it can be kind of problematic. A lot of people simply just don't like it because it's dynamic. They don't get compile time errors. They don't get type safety, all that good stuff that we like from C#, right? So actually, the language itself does not support those constructs at all. That doesn't mean we can't kind of do that in the editor, though. Visual Studio can just kind of fake them in a really cool way. In order for us to do that, we threw out the old JavaScript editor. And then we built a new one. It took a while. It's the same editor, actually, that powers the Metro apps, the WinJS stuff. Anyway, it's built on top of IE10's JavaScript engine, the one called Chakra. It's ridiculously fast. And you can actually feel it as you type, how fast it is. The validation is instant. And the IntelliSense is really, really good. This should almost be illegal. It's that good. So let's just play around with this. So you see what I've done here. I created a function. And I added two XML comments, sort of similar to what we know from C#, right? And I'm basically saying that X and Y are numbers. So number is a keyword like an integer in C#, right? Number is an integer in JavaScript-ish. Anyway, let's do this. Let's look at the IntelliSense. X dot. You see here, this is IntelliSense for a number. Right? So because we specify up here what X is, that's how we get the IntelliSense. So this was completely impossible before. I'll get back to why this is cool, because right now it seems like, oh, I have to do extra work. but hang on. So let's create a string, and this string is going to be x plus y. So what will the IntelliSense be here if I hit dot? Let's try. It's going to be a number. So why is that? Why did it know that x plus y is a number? The only way it can know that is because we actually execute all the JavaScript. And that's where the IE10 JavaScript engine really kicks in. So all your JavaScript in the background is actually executed with a lot of intrinsics. So let's say you have a loop that runs forever, right? While true, you never break. All that stuff we can handle. So you can never kill it. I will challenge you to try to kill it. I'm sure you cannot. But what if we do to string? The editor does not know what to string is. It's just a function on that integer or that number. Let's see what happens. This is clearly now a string, and I get the IntelliSense for a string. Because after the IE10 engine renders to string, what's returned from JavaScript is a string, and that's how we know it. And you see there's absolutely no delay. It's really, really fast. All right. So let's do some jQuery. How many people here use jQuery? Oh, cool. That's a lot of people. So this is what jQuery looks like now. Look how awesome this is. This looks kind of like C#, doesn't it? Like method overloads, right? Doesn't exist. Function overload does not exist in JavaScript. But we can use some of these comments that I showed you here to make the effect. So when you get the latest NuGet package of jQuery, you will get this same experience. This will work in the RC as well, by the way. So let's just find all the div elements. And you see I now get, again, full IntelliSense with comments and everything here. I'm just going to set the HTML to the S, and here we go. All right, again, everything all the way through, fully IntelliSense. This is not jQuery specific. It's any JavaScript file that can be executed by a browser, which means probably all of them. Have you ever wondered what goes on in jQuery? Like, what actually happens behind the curtain? For me, it's like, oh, you know, I trust that it does whatever it does pretty well. It's a big file, right? And it's pretty smart people who build it. So I kind of trust that. But I just really want to know what that HTML function does. So how do I figure that out? It would be kind of cool if I could just maybe right-click and say, go to definition. Yeah. Finally, this is really, really cool. So it actually takes me into jQuery. I can now, for the first time, very easily see what the heck is going on. I'm no longer left in the dark. I can continue. What is this? Leading whitespace F12? Boom. Here we go. Oh, this is what it does. Makes it really, really cool. And of course, if it's in the same file, I do F12 here, and it moves up. As I would expect. Now, here's the side effect. The side effect of using those two comments right there is I can now tell people that are going to use this function what I expect you to parse in as parameters. So x and y could be, what, a number or a custom object or an array of something, right? But since I added those parameter comments up there, I actually get the real thing here. All right. Looks like C#. It looks like type safety, doesn't it? Sort of. At least it tells me exactly what types that I expect for me to work with comments and everything. So really, really a big step up. So there's a talk tomorrow, I think, where they do a full deep dive of the new JavaScript editor. Also, if you want to write JavaScript for Metro style apps. It's really, really awesome. You should come go see those demos, and they explain how the whole IE Chakra engine works within Visual Studio, it's kind of mind-boggling. Okay. So what I have here is really new. It only exists on this laptop. It's in my private code repository, actually. Anyway, what it means is that some of the stuff that I'm going to show you has never been showed before outside my team. So there might be 10 people in the world that have seen what I'm about to show you. Where did I put my style sheet? Here we go. So here's another way of looking at styles. Look at the colors. See how we get these nice little squares? That's sort of nice. I can see exactly what's going on. What about this image right here? If I hover it, I get a preview. What about the font? One of the problems, again, we're kind of coming back to the whole browser combat thing. It has to work in all browsers. How do I actually know? If I don't know, how would I find out? You will go to Bing or Google and do whatever to figure it out. But you can also just hover over any property, and we will tell you. So that's kind of cool. It will actually tell you exactly what version it is. I'll show you that in a minute. So how can we add all this information? We're trying to do that in a way that's completely unobtrusive. So give you all the information you need. Now, I showed you the snippets before where I could write border radius, and they would automatically insert the stuff that I needed, like the Mozilla and the WebKit-specific things. But what if I already have a website? I'm not going to add border radius again. It's already in there. But it might have been wrong, right? I might have been missing the WebKit one. I only had the Mozilla-specific. So here's an example of that. Outline. I get like this error. It's a weird error, right? It's not red. It has a different color. It's purple. Let's look in the error list. So I zero errors, zero warnings, but then I have this new tab over here, messages 5. We've never done that before. We've never added anything to messages in the CSS editor. So let's take a look at what it says. We are now adding help for browser-specific implementations, as well as like best practices kind of stuff. This has been really, really difficult in the past. But we do more than just show you an error. So let me just back out of this. Let me double-click on this guy, and it brings me to this outline thing. You'll see here that we've added these little smart tags. You know them from C#, that little underscore thing. Like when I hover it, it pops up, and I can say, add missing vendor specific. Boom. That's kind of nice. Here we have one of the same ones. So you might think, oh, this is like, there's 5 errors. That's not a lot. No, probably not. But let's open a file here. I have a little collection of funny files, real world files. So you might recognize some of these names. So I'm a good citizen. I would never pick on anyone, you know? I'm not going to show you all the errors that are in these files. I'm going to show the error in a Microsoft file. I think I can do that with a good conscience. So let's open live.com here. Let me just close this guy. No, let's leave it. So 59 messages. And a few errors here. So let's take a look at the errors. So I always ignore the errors and throw them away. I don't want to look at them. I disable error checking. You should never do that in Visual Studio 2012. The errors are there for a reason. It's not like before, right? Here's one. this is not a valid HTML tag. Well, it's because that, you know, it's a class name. It should have been a class name. Oh, what was that? Look at this. You now get IntelliSense for class names. So that's kind of cool. And we get IntelliSense for all the HTML elements. I can do class. It gives me all the classes. Here's an ID, you know, this guy. Then we're going to do a like a pseudo selector so I can use them together. So give me all these CATs, PR close, except for the ones that are of class body, for instance. So see, we now get full IntelliSense and validation for everything in a selector. So it's gonna help you find these type of bugs that the Windows Live team had here with this one. This one is never executed. There's not an HTML element with this name. So these are important. Here's another example. Cursor hand. We now tell you, hey, maybe you want to use pointer instead. We try to help you and give you a way out of these things. But the real fun things are actually over in the messages right here. There is a lot of problems. Like they forgot a lot of stuff. So I could take them one by one and go through the whole thing 59 times here and correct everything. But what I could do instead is I could just right-click, and I can say remove duplicates. Boom. Add missing standard properties. This is the case where you have a Mozilla border radius, but you don't have just border radius. You should always have both. So let's just add the missing standard properties. Where did my error thing go? We're getting down there. Add missing vendor specifics. Boom, 22 messages. And then finally, let's just alphabetize all the properties. And all of a sudden, it looks pretty good. We're down to 10 messages. So by just right-clicking on the entire file and clicking 4 times, I can clear basically all of my browser-specific problems. Here's one that it didn't catch. So let's just do that manually. Now, the rest is like best practices. Here's one. This happens. There is not a site on the planet that where this doesn't happen. You use display inline, yet you have added a height and a width. This happens all over, every day. You know, this is a very common thing. If you have display inline, height and width and margins do not work. They will be ignored. If you in C# write something that is unused, you get a compiler warning saying, hey, you have unused code over here. You want to get rid of those, right? Same thing here. But it's in a message. It's not in an error. It's in the happy blue message. You can choose to do it if you want, but, you know, it's up to you. So let's play with that transform thing. That was kind of cool before. No, border radius. Let's do border radius. So now it looks a little bit different. So as you can, I don't know if you can see this. So you can probably tell that the vendor specifics are now dimmed down. Right? They're not popping as the other properties. You can very, very quickly tell that here are properties that are kind of sub-properties to something else. And of course, again, I get the full support here. I even get the numbers, you know, IE9, Safari 5. It tells me very precisely what's supported here. So if I want to change 15 pixels to 20 pixels, I would have to change it 1, 2, 3, 4 places, right? That's kind of annoying. That's one of the things that makes CSS really annoying. We can also just do like this. Synchronize them. But actually, the Mozilla one, actually, that should be 22. Whoop. Now it pops back out. And if I change this guy down here to 21, it doesn't follow along. If I change it to 22, boom. So finally, I can get this done very, very easily. This has been a big problem in the past. So we have this new feature in ASP.NET called bundling and minification. How many people here have heard about that or use it? Hands up. Okay. So bundling and minification is an effort to optimize the performance of your website. There's a lot of things you can do. One of them is to bundle all your CSS files into one, and then minify your CSS by removing all white space and so on. So that's built into the framework. But we can do a lot more to performance optimize our site. One of them being reducing the number of requests that we have to make, the browser has to make to our website. So it would be kind of nice if we could take images like this background image I have right here and kind of make it go away. Like make the request go away. Okay, that's weird. But the way you do that is that you can take the bytes of that image and Base64 encode and create what's called a data URI. This is completely standard. It's supported in IE8 and everyone else. And it's really difficult to do. How do you Base64 encode something like on the fly? Well, there's this little thing right here. I can just click it and say embed as Base64 data URI. Boom. We get a little string here. So what I'm doing right now, actually, by doing this, I'm embedding the entire image inside my style sheet. Right? So the request is now gone. And then I'm doing a trick, because I told you, it only works in IE8 and above. So IE6 and 7, they don't understand what this is. So they read, oh, background image. Here's some weird goop. I'm going to ignore that. Thank you very much. And it moves on. It says, oh, background image. It doesn't know what this is. Oh, this is a background image. This is the hack I showed you before. And then you just keep this guy. Every other browser will look at star background image and say, I don't know what this is. I'm going to ignore it. But IE6 and 7 will say, hallelujah, I'm going to render this picture. So in any other browser than the old ones, you have one request less than before. So that's actually pretty cool. The overhead by doing this is around 20 to 30%. This is too much, right? So what you do is that you just compress it. So if you use IIS 7.5 or 8, if you're running Windows 8, that happens automatically. So the overhead by doing this, if you use gzip compression, which is on by default, the overhead is 1 to 2% of adding that string. So definitely you should do that. But that's kind of easy. And of course, I mean, the preview still works. And let's say that I didn't have this one. I just, you know, I was handed this file. Say, I just want to get this picture. So what I can do is I can save to file. Let's just call it ticket. Here we go. So here's another thing that's kind of difficult. If you work with fonts, I mean, fonts are easy, right? I mean, it's just a list of names. But CSS3 has this notion of adding your own fonts. And if you're working with designers, which I think maybe some of you do, they, you know, designers have these weird ideas that they want it exactly as it looks in Photoshop, right? So that means I want this specific font that only works in that Linux distribution, you know, Now they can. Now they can take those custom fonts and embed them in the website. It's kind of difficult. So what I always do is that I search for it online and I figure out what is the syntax to do that. So we can now do it in some different ways. Let's say I want to add a font here. I actually have a font file. So I'm going to add a new one. So pick from file. Okay. So I have fonts. And here I have the same font in two different formats. One for IE9 and everything else, and then TTF. It works all the way back to like IE5.5. This is actually one thing where IE was awesome, because it supported custom fonts all the way back to IE5.5. I'll just select one of them. I'll select Woof. That's the new standard thing. here we go. So Cursive Sans was inserted for me, and this thing was added at the top. This is sort of a complex syntax, right? You don't just do this. You have to kind of learn it. Well, you don't actually have to learn it. You can just use tools. I could have also done this. Just drag it in. Boom. Look how it knows that there's both a TTF and a woof, even though I only took one file. We look at this and say, hey, you have two. You probably want both, which you do. I mean, you always probably want that. Media queries. Boom. Very easy. So this is not going to be in RTM. These are prototypes and experiments. But when that is said, we don't want to sit on gold either. So we want to make sure that you get these. So here's how it's going to work. For the first time ever, we're actually able to update Visual Studio after you have downloaded it and installed it. And we plan to do that every 3 to 4 months. You'll get a little notification in the corner of the screen saying, hey, there is an update for Visual Studio. And we will update with features, with the latest browser support for CSS and HTML around every 3 to 4 months. So all the stuff you see here is going to make it into Visual Studio and be fully supported and everything. So this will come maybe, I don't know, Christmas time or something. I don't know. It will make it at some point when we have time. But you see, we already have the product working. So we'll make this available as a download on the gallery when Visual Studio hits RTM. I would give it to you now, but it actually requires the latest RTM bits. So otherwise, you would already have had this. So it is coming. All of this stuff I'm showing you here, you will be able to get for free after you pay for Visual Studio. Any questions? Must be one question. I know it's late in the afternoon. Here's one. That, my friend, is a brilliant idea. The question was, if I do this trick where I encode my file, where did it go? This one. And I change the file on disk, is there a way to update it? No, there is not, but I'll definitely add that for sure. That's a brilliant idea. Yeah. Actually, let me, yeah, let's take a question here. Okay. Mindscape. That is a good question. Will all this work for SCSS files? Perhaps. I will show you this instead. Less. This is not SCSS, I know. This is less. How many people here use less? A few people. So SCSS and less are like a pre-compiled language on top of CSS. So take a look at this. It's kind of cool. I can define variables right here. So I have a variable called corner, 15 pixels. And I can also do like a function here. It's called a mixin. I can call that mixin to kind of import all that into my rules. So I can do rounded corners. And you see it expects a radius, but there's a default 5 pixels. So I can just close it, and that's it. I could also give it like 3 pixels. Or I could use that variable I just created. So corner, and here we go. So we're actually working pretty hard right now to get less support. We're going to get SCSS as well, but I don't have the demo to show you. I would have. we're going to get both because they're so similar. So it's sort of easy for us. When we have one, we can sort of get the other one a little bit cheap. But I mean, we're still a bit far from there. You will get all this when we RTM. But you will also get coffee. If you want to do CoffeeScript, you also have a full editor. And here we go. Do you use CoffeeScript? Who uses CoffeeScript? No one. One. OK, we have one guy. All right, that's for you, sir. Here you go. But yeah, you see everything works. You get the nice, the colors and all that stuff. Even you're in a LESS file, not a CSS file. So everything that we make work in CSS, we will make work in LESS and SCSS. Yeah. Anyone else? Jakob? Oh, awesome. I was just about to forget that, actually. So yeah, so it's funny. So we have this user voice page, aspnet.uservoice.com. And all the features that you guys want, you just enter them here, and then you can vote them up. And that's how we actually prioritize the stuff that we're doing. And just last week, we got this thing, linear gradient and IntelliSense for gradients. Gradients are really, really difficult, CSS3 gradients. So actually, earlier today, I look at this like several times a week. And I noticed this one, said, hey, let me see what I can do. So I actually played around with a gradient. So here's a gradient, linear gradient, right? Or like a, we can do like a WebKit radial gradient. How do you do those? I'll hit tab. That's how you do those. All right. So gradients you now have nice snippets for. Does that answer your question? Awesome. Yes, one more here. What about JavaScript debugging? JavaScript debugging is, what do you mean, what about it? I mean, is it, what the support is for JavaScript debugging? Okay. So, as I told you, the whole experience, the whole JavaScript editor is upgraded. We threw everything out and started fresh. Same with the debugger. So the debugger no longer takes like 15 seconds to actually hook up to IE to attach to the process. It's really, really snappy. You can do breakpoints. You can do all that stuff. Is it only going to work in IE? I do believe so, yeah. I think they're working on it, though. Yep. Can you turn it off? Uh-huh. Yes. Can you turn off JavaScript debugging? Absolutely. You turn it off in Internet Explorer, actually.
When I start Visual Studio, it will turn it back on.
Really? I've never heard about that. It should not do that. That is new to me. Let me follow up on it. Let's talk afterwards. If you can repro it, let's fix it. Yep. Okay. Well, I want to show you one more thing. No? Yes? Okay. So, as I told you, if you want to decide what features we built, go to aspnetuservoice.com. Seriously, we are sitting there every week and we're just picking off those features and fixing them. Go in there, suggest whatever you need, vote on the things you want, and we'll make it happen. And this time around, because we can update Visual Studio, and we will update Visual Studio every 3 months, what you suggest today, you might get in 3 months. So please do that. This is like a awesome opportunity, I think. Read more. Go to asp.net/vnext. We have white papers, videos, all sorts of stuff. Like there's huge amounts of data and screenshots and whatnot. There's every little detail if you're interested there. We'll also have a blog that might be interesting. So contact me. Please contact me. Send me an email or on Twitter if there is anything you want, if you think that, you know, there is a problem over here, we could do better if we did, you know, X, Y, Z. Please do contact me, because we're going to fix it, right? So thank you very much, guys.